from the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, and Odyssey Sports Station. Vision.
It's not like there are a lot of high net worth individuals that are interested in buying a team and have the resource to buy a team. The interest from a potential casino magnate, and let's use Wynn and its ownership group as an example, since they are already entrenched in Boston, is that you can build around the team. Like, you're buying the team, but you're also buying everything that goes into owning a team in a specific area. If, say, hypothetically, the Wynn bought majority interest in the Celtics, you could build out an arena in Everett, which they've been looking to do. I mean, we know they've been interested in an arena for the, or stadium for the Revolution. You know, they've been eyeballing stuff like this for a while. If you bought the Celtics, you could build an arena down there and make them the centerpiece of you know, an attraction. This is kind of a trend line in the NBA, with these valuations being so big that it sort of makes a casino partner a little bit more appealing.
Chris Mannix on Monday here on Jones and Mego with Arkin. No Arkin today. That interview is on YouTube if you want to go check it out in full. Good stuff from Mannix. And that was within hours of the news that Wick was going to sell the team. Pretty good overview. He said he hadn't heard anything on John Henry's interest in buying the team. Didn't rule it out, but said he hadn't heard anything. Again, you can check out that full interview on YouTube. Subscribe to WEEI. Seek out the Jones and Mego show there. You can also go back and listen on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Get it on your phone. Take it with you wherever you go. Hour number two. Tatum is shocked, quote unquote, about the sale. Maybe he was when he first found out about it. Maybe he's stretching the truth. I do know that the odds we just went through, BetAG, I didn't see any casino magnets on there, right? I didn't see any of that.
Mm-mm.
And so, I don't know.
Charles Barkley likes casinos.
That's a good point. Probably the closest thing there.
Magnet for casinos.
That's probably the closest thing on the list. I didn't see any of those names on there. So I don't know how...
That's my mistake.
I don't know how realistic a list with Tom Brady and Dana White and everything else is. Never mind missing all the casino magnets, but it's interesting. I don't know. The further we get away from that with Mannix, how do you feel about that idea? He said a lot of people metaphorically tapped him on the shoulder and said, look this direction. It's what's going on with the Mavs. Obviously, sports gambling is huge for our industry, for sports in general. That seems to be where a lot of things are going. The lines are blurred. As we get, 48 hours out from the Wick news and, you know, going on however long it was since we talked to Mannix late on Monday, do we feel like things are trending in that direction, trending away from that direction, that a casino or someone like Steve Wynn could own the Celtics?
Well, it's largely been a vacuum of information, so I can't say whether it's trending one way or the other. I think it's clear that it's a uniquely attractive situation for an outsider, somebody not local to Massachusetts or New England who's like a lifelong Celtics fan that wants to come in and be part of the tradition here. Somebody from the outside who looks at an extremely valuable team who doesn't have a home, doesn't have their own building, but is in a state with legalized sports gambling and a casino right up the road, or the ability to build another one somewhere else with the whole complex there with the Celtics in it. There's not a whole lot of other situations that somebody who wants to plunk down a lot of money into that scenario can look around and find something turnkey ready to go like that, unless they want to pay an expansion fee. So I think that that's more just, it kind of like makes sense if you're looking at why would an outsider come in and maybe really drive the price up or be interested in this team, aside from the obvious attraction of the Celtics brand.
It's fair. The Greg Hill Show asked today, I watched this video earlier, and you can find that on YouTube, I'm sure.
Hey, it's Greg.
Hey, Greg.
Would you be upset, asked Greg, if the Celtics left the Garden for a new venue? Like, to me, that wouldn't bother me. If they, like, left the city, like,
yeah,
they went to Foxborough. I'm not talking about going to Everett.
Everett's annoying, too.
Forget Foxborough. What if they went to, like, Foxwoods?
Okay, right. Something like that. No, no.
Like, out of state, but still in New England.
If they left the city or even went to something like Quincy, I'm like, okay, what are we doing? But Everett, like, I don't...
How is Quincy different from Everett?
Oh, Everett's way closer.
You think? Maybe to you. Not to me.
I live in the city. Everett's super close to me.
I live in
the
city, too, and Quincy is closer to me than Everett.
But is it?
Yes.
I don't think it is.
It is.
I don't think it is.
It is.
The wind is right. No, I was saying, we know the site. The wind is right there. It's like right out of city lines. I don't know where they're putting it.
Quincy is big. You'd probably have to throw it next to some giant warehouse.
You're basically in the city is my point. I don't know where you're putting it in Quincy.
Look, if they're putting it in Dorchester, I think that's cool.
Okay,
I don't want the Seaport Mall that goes along with it.
My point is it's the city. And so,
am I so tied to TD Garden that I'm like, my God, you can't take them out of there? No.
But that's my point. I wouldn't have an issue with moving out of the garden. In fact, if they're moving into a nice new arena, that's great. My issue would be if they leave the city, if they move to Foxborough, if they move to Fox Woods. Quincy feels way too far. And so, to me, that would be the bigger issue. I don't care that they're moving. In fact, it might be nice if they had their own venue.
Are people so emotionally tied to TD Garden for the Celtics?
No. Is it possible that you're just like, hey, it's nice to go see the Celtics, the Bruins, all in the same spot? I know what I'm doing. I know how to do it. I'm comfortable doing it. I've been doing it. Is it just that?
Yeah, but look, I've been in cities before where you build a new stadium and it revitalizes, or to some people, they think it's bad for an area because sometimes it drives people out of their homes and everything. But you can also have the other experience.
Yeah, where in D.C.?
D.C., they build Nationals Park.
Right, and that was, where was that?
A completely new thing.
Right, but
It's over by the Naval Yard.
Because I've been there.
And now it's a completely different area than it was when they built it 15 plus years ago. And look, that was a really big problem for people who had lived there for a long time. So I don't want to be insensitive to that. If you go there, it's an enjoyable experience and nobody's going oh my God, the Nats should have played in the old RFK dump for the next 30 years,
Right. And so to me, that's where I would have an issue. A new venue to me seems cool. But especially because the garden is old and it's not that it's loud. I always say it's loud, but it's not a nice arena. It's never been a nice arena.
Well, and it's not Fenway.
Right.
It's not like it's some place that has been around for 100 years and people are going.
It's not the old garden. There's no real nostalgia to it. And so my issue would be leaving the city.
They can put a parquet floor wherever they go.
Yeah, I don't care if they have a new venue.
It's not the same.
A new venue might be nice.
I miss the Fleet Center.
A new venue might be the kind of place where you can, really be in the bidding for Final Fours and things like that. If it's nice and new, there's a chance you can do that. And so there's other stuff that could come along with it. Not just concerts and Bruins games. 617-779-7937. As we discuss the next steps for this team, in the meantime, they're going to have a season to play. Other teams are still trying to keep up with them on the court. Who is their biggest competition, Mego?
So I maintain that I don't think that there's real competition in the East.
Okay, but who's their biggest competition?
Their biggest is the Knicks. I think it's the Knicks. And by, say, competition, they could go 6 games with the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals if that happens next season. I could see that. I'm just not afraid of the Sixers. Adding Paul George there, that team's biggest issue is the availability of their stars. And so adding the combination of Paul George to Joel Embiid, I love Embiid. I wish Embiid was the kind of guy that you saw in the Eastern Conference Finals year after year, and he would talk smack about the Celtics, and we'd all get mad, and we'd have a little voicemail open where everybody could leave messages for Embiid and how much they hate him, and that would be great. But that's not who he is, because half the time he's broken. So I think adding Paul George to that equation, who is broken half the time, not this last playoffs, but half the time out with the Clippers, and he's in his mid-30s now, that equation does not scare me at all.
So I'm surprised we agree on this, but I think most people feel it's Philly.
I think they're ridiculous.
Well, look,
because they have an MVP, a former MVP there.
Obviously, you can't guarantee this. Let's say Philly is healthy, though. Who are you taking, Philly or the Knicks?
If they're healthy, that's a totally different game.
Okay, but I'm saying, if they're healthy,
then I would take Philly. Kay. But I don't think they'll be healthy.
Okay, that's not my question. If you can guarantee they're healthy, obviously you can't. Mm-hmm. But if Philly's healthy, who's the scarier team in a 7-game series?
Philly.
I don't think so.
You're that scared of the Knicks?
I'm not afraid of the Knicks, but I'm saying the team to me, out of the two of them, I'm more afraid of the Knicks than Philly. I think the Celtics will beat both of them. I'm with you on that.
I think that's gambling on Jalen Brunson is going to continue this crazy ascent next year. And I don't know that. We don't know who Jalen Brunson is yet. He may be somebody who looks even better than Anthony Edwards in his trajectory. And we're all sitting there going oh my God, he's a top 5 player every year now going forward. But I don't know that. Yeah, I haven't seen enough of him.
I've seen enough of Embiid to know that whether he's healthy or not, he does not scare me. Embiid doesn't scare me. He doesn't. He doesn't.
Is it because you just don't like his game?
Yeah, I mean,
a big man's game?
Part of it is just I think he vanishes in fourth quarters. He's out of shape. So even if he's healthy, he's still like managing himself late in games. Embiid doesn't scare me. Paul George is never scared. Nice player. And I trust me, I've wanted him at various times over the years.
Yeah, like 7 years ago.
Right. But I'm just saying, more recent than that for me. I don't want to speak for you.
Give me Pacers, Paul George.
But more recent than that for me. The team I fear more is the Knicks. Out of the two, neither one's going to beat the Celtics in my estimation. But I think the Knicks are bigger competition. I do. I thought they were their biggest competition last year for the Celtics because there's something to how they play well together. They do. And I think Bridges, that's going to continue. I think getting Mikal Bridges, that Nova Knicks thing, maybe they've leaned too far into it, but I believe in that. How are these guys going to fit? I know in theory they should fit well. Maxey, Embiid, George, it's a guard, it's a big, it's a wing. In theory they should fit well together. The Knicks already do. And the Knicks were already their biggest competition in the East last year, and they're adding Mikal Bridges. I think that's bigger competition. Whether Philly's healthy or not, I think that's bigger competition.
Either way, I think any real competition is going to come from the West. And the most exciting thing to me that's happened out there is that Denver has gotten weaker. And so
we were just talking about this in the last break. You're down on Denver?
I'm not so down on Denver. I'm just not as afraid of them as I was even at the beginning of the playoffs last year. Or last year, I say that. Like, okay, 2 months ago. Like, I just don't see them as the same team. Like, I look at who's rising in the West. And OKC, everybody last year, okay, it's like way too early for them. I think OKC and I think Anthony Edwards out in Minnesota, they both look like they reminded me of Tatum and Brown a couple years ago going through the playoffs. Like the turnovers that they would have, the lack of composure that they would have. You look at that and you go like, oh yeah, they are still like a couple years away. So I more look at those teams and I go, Denver may just be a one and done, which is crazy because of how good Jokic is. But if they just let pieces slide away from him, then that's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel...
And I'm not afraid of the Mavs.
I still fear Denver more... I'm not afraid of the Mavs. Klay Thompson or no Klay Thompson. I'm not afraid of the Mavs. I'm with you on that, 100%. Obviously, the Clippers drop off without George. While we're crapping on George over here, they do drop off without George.
But, you know, Bronny, the combination of of the smartest guy that's ever been in the NBA in J.J. Redick and Bronny James, that's something to behold.
J.J. Redick already looks like the job has aged.
J.J. Redick is already bothering me so much. Like, I was listening to some of the introductory press conference yesterday.
Wait a minute. I thought he bothered us as an analyst. Of course he's already bothering you as a man.
Maybe he'll be less condescending when he's a coach.
No, more. More. Wait till they lose a game. Wait till that happens. Like, look out for him. And so, no, to me, Denver is still, if you're talking about real teams, Denver is still that team. And I'm taking the Celtics over Denver, but I still want to see what they're up to. And, you know, they let Bruce Brown walk last year. They got rid of KCP. I still think that's the team to pay attention to because Michael Porter is a big trade chip. And if they're really going to remake their team, that's the team to keep an eye on. OKC with Hartenstein and Alex Caruso. Get out of my face.
The missing piece.
Meanwhile, you can tune in each and every week for the manager of the Red Sox, Alex Cora. It's normally 2:30 on Wednesdays. He had to back up a little bit today. And he joins us right now here on Jones and Mega with Arcan. He's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh. By Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good. And by Sherwin-Williams. The Sherwin-Williams Pro Plus program helps you manage and grow your paint business. Alex Cora, how you doing? How's South Beach?
It's been good. It's been good. A lot of friends and the families in town, so it's been fun.
You said last week, and I know you've talked to Chris Cotillo at Mass Live about this. We were talking about your comments there earlier. You said last week you want the Red Sox to get greedy, and you said this to us in similar terms last week when you joined the show. Aiming higher than the wild card spot is how you were kind of framing that. How does this team go about doing that? How do you go about getting greedy?
Yeah, just keep playing the brand of baseball that we have been playing. I think offensively, we're in a good spot. Obviously, hitting the ball out of the ballpark, but putting pressure on the opposition, running the bases. You know, the pitching, I know we didn't pitch well there for a few days or a few weeks, but we do believe we can keep getting better in that aspect. I think yesterday was a good start. You know, you come here to Miami, you win the series. Let's put it that way, right? There's no letdowns. You go to New York, win the series. We got Oakland and Kansas City right before the All-Star break. There's a good chance for us to to keep gaining ground and kind of like get away from the 500 mark. I think that's very important. And the guys know it. You know, yesterday, for me, this is a big test. You know, we flew here Sunday, Monday off. You got families and the beach and the water and all that. And you can kind of like lose sight of what we're trying to accomplish. And right away, we score runs. We pitch well, and it was a good game. But, you know, we're in the business of winning series. And the more we do that, the better it's going to be. And I think we're in a good place.
Okay, so many, including myself, and I, you seem to clear this up a bit with Mass Live, but many, including myself, took the get greedy comment as a message to ownership or management to make a move at the deadline. Is that part of it?
No, I think, honestly, the deadline is a deadline, and obviously right now we're out of the playoff picture, but the more we win, the better it's going to be, I do believe. And like I said yesterday to Chris, it's not about putting pressure on the front office or ownership to make a move. It's us trying to make it to the playoffs. You know, we had two set goals before the season started. It was make it to the playoff and win the World Series. We have to make sure we get in a position to accomplish the number one, the goal number one. And I think we've been talking to the players here the last few days, the last 4 or 5 days, kind of like, hey, Don't stop playing. Don't stop playing hard. Keep doing the things that we've been doing the last month. June was great, but July can be better. And they all understand that. And I think as a group, we're in a good place. And these guys are going to keep playing hard. We're going to continue to win ball games. And then, you know, in a month, we'll know where we're at.
So, Alex, there's keeping pressure on the group to be competitive as a group. But individually, what you've been going through with Bayo and the pressure that he seems to have on him, and you alluded to maybe there being, you know, a challenge with his mental game. How do you help along a young player like that who is maybe feeling the weight of the world on his shoulders and saying like, hey, this is something that's going to pass and getting through it?
I think at the end of the day, he needs to understand that the simpler the better, right? You know, and we keep talking about throwing strikes, work ahead, stay ahead. And if you look at his games, yeah, the home run have been part of it. But before the homer, there's two walks involved, right, in that inning. You know, there's certain plays that we don't make. And you can see his body language on the mound, you know, kind of like, here we go again, that feeling. And just talking to him, just don't feel that you have to carry the pitching staff. You know, don't feel that you have to go seven innings every outing. Just give us a chance to win. And there were three outings that he wasn't very pleased with them. And I was like, man, this was really good. It was Tampa, Baltimore, and I forgot the other one. I think, oh, Detroit. He pitched into a seventh inning, and he was disappointed with the result. And when you start looking at the result, either on the mound or at the batter's box, you're chasing the wrong thing. I do believe you got to stay with the process. And as a pitcher, you're not chasing wins. You know, you're chasing quality innings and give us a chance to win the ball game. In the batter's box, you're not chasing hits. You're chasing good at bats. The more good at bats you put, the results are going to be better. And I think that's the mentality that he needs to take. And you know, like he said, you know, today is kind of like a reset. It feels like opening night for him. That's what he said on the papers. And hopefully today he gives us a chance to win.
The process has certainly been working for Tanner Houck. Wondering about his workload, which has been impressive throughout this season. But how helpful would it be to, in the upcoming weeks, maybe get another reinforcement there? Would that help take some of the workload off him and some of your other rotational players who are going deep into innings?
Yeah, I think having this past Monday off and the Monday after the New York series and going to the All-Star break is going to give us a chance to take care of these guys. Yesterday, for example, Cutter had 73, 74 pitches in six innings. He had a short one because of the rain against Toronto. So we were able to kind of like take care of him this 5 days. He's a full go on Sunday, and I think he has one more after that, right before the All-Star break. With Tanner, he got an extra day, and yeah, we know where they at. We know that the The innings are getting up there. This is the first time they've been in this situation, but at the same time, they're healthy. The medical staff have done an amazing job just taking care of them. We got all the information we need to make decisions based on workload and innings. And right now, especially those two guys, Cutter and Tanner, are feeling really good and throwing the ball well.
We're talking to the manager of the Red Sox, Alex Cora, here on Jones and Mego on WEEI. It's funny, you earlier referenced these things called the standings. You're a half game out of a wild card spot. Do you ever look at the playoff odds? FanGraphs, Baseball Reference, you ever look at the playoff odds?
Sometimes I run into them, but I'm not a big fan.
Why not? Why not? Why aren't you a fan of baseball odds versus the standings? Why not?
I don't know. I mean, the Rangers were in the World Series last year. The D-backs were in the World Series. The Nationals in 2019 made it to the World Series. So there's something about the season that dictates who's going to make it, who's not, right? And, you know, I understand what the odds means, but in my case, man, I like looking at the standings. Well, not all the time, because the last few years has been tough to look at that standing in the Green Monster, but you know my point. You know, I think there's something about the season that dictates who you are and what you can do as a group, and I like looking at the standings.
Do you ever try to dissuade baseball ops or ownership or anyone from being fixed? It sounds like they're fixated on the playoff odds more so than the standings. Do you ever try to dissuade them from that?
We have conversations about that, and I always, you know, I'm very honest about who we are as a group and what we can accomplish. You know, it's conversations that happened in 2019 with Dave Dombrowski, and it happened with Hein the last 3 years, and probably it's going to happen this year. But right now, I think as a group, we're gaining momentum. We're playing good baseball. I still believe there's more, right? We're still out of the picture if the season ends today, but that's not the case, and we can keep winning games, keep winning series, and put ourselves in a better position than right now.
Time now for our Sherwin-Williams question of the week. It's sponsored by Sherwin-Williams. You can ask Sherwin-Williams how to bring color to your life. Our Sherwin-Williams question of the week is from Kevin Bongarzoni from Bongarzoni Painting. Which young player, in your estimation, Alex, could be the next one to step up and play in the big leagues?
In our minor league system?
I'm assuming that's probably the gist of it. Yeah, from the minor leagues, who's the next one to step up?
Yeah. I think as far as stepping up, I cannot tell you one, right? There's still, you know, like player development and stuff that some of the guys that, you know, are in AA and AAA, they need to, you know, keep getting better and improving. I think, honestly, a guy that is getting our attention and he's having a great season in AAA is Sogard. You know, he's a switch hitter that can play all over the place in the outfield. He can play in the infield. He puts a good at bat from the right side. And, you know, he's in the conversations whenever, you know, we're talking about, you know, what's next for us, where we at as a group, you know, who can help us. Sogi's name is becoming a theme. And I'm happy because it is a guy that he's a good player, a good kid that has grinded through his career, and he's putting himself in the conversation.
Okay, that's our Sherwin-Williams question of the week. If you have paint questions, you can ask Sherwin-Williams. Alex Cora, we appreciate the time. Good luck in Miami. We'll talk to you next week.
See you guys next week. Have a good one.
All right, Alex Cora joining us here on Jones and Mego with Arkin. No Arkin today on WEEI. I liked Ryan's suggestion in my ear. Put the playoff odds on the Fenway scoreboard.
He likes looking at that monster. He's talked about it a lot where he walks out and just gets like this nice big look at, you know, what everybody's doing in baseball. Then maybe in like smaller white letters, you have little percentage markers too.
Well, it seems like the kind of thing that maybe Breslow might enjoy it. Maybe John Henry would enjoy it whenever he decides to trot into the ballpark. That's Alex Cora.
You have to be there to see it.
Right. If you missed any of that, it's on the Odyssey app.
When are the bananas coming back?
AUDACY. Get it on your phone.
There's a countdown to bananas games.
And take it with you wherever you go. It's free. It's easy. It's there. It'll be up on YouTube shortly as well. Subscribe to WEEI. Seek out Jones and Mego. Our interview every week with the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. We ran a little late there. We had to reschedule Cora or bump it back in the day. So Ryan has all the latest in trending. And then let's get to the Bruins. How much longer is Monty going to be around? Some interesting developments there. We'll get to it next.
asking the questions that you need answered.
How does this bra work again? Why are there so many clasps?
You're listening to Jones and Mego on WEEI.
I didn't sense frustration, but the lack of our ability to score in the playoffs in general. You know, you can't win every game 2-1. We didn't finish. I mean, I don't know. Outside of game one, I don't think, did we score more than 2 goals? I mean, my head's all spinning right now, so I don't know. You know, I think we had 3 and we didn't score more than, okay, there you go. But it's not the only thing, you know. Like, there's several other elements of the series. You know, the territorial ozone time that they had over us, it has compounding effects. And I thought we started the game off great, and it got away from us in the second.
Jim Montgomery, head coach of the Bruins, for now. Right after the Bruins were eliminated by the Florida Panthers, we played those comments. At the time, didn't think much of him. We're all like,
"Yeah,
he's
all spinning right now."
So. We're like, "Hey, he's right. Team can't score." So that's an issue. We did mock him for that line. Head spinning. Like, "Hey, Monty, you might want some answers ready to go. You are the coach of the team." But yeah, they didn't have a lot to score, and they need to upgrade that. I think we mostly agreed with that comment at the time, right? I don't think we had a big issue with it. Turns out his boss, one of them anyway, Don Sweeney does. And it's Jones and Mego, no Arcan today here on WEEI. If you missed any Alex Cora, he just joined us earlier this hour. You want to hear him, I don't want to say ranting about, but disagreeing with the playoff odds that Craig Breslow and ownership value so much.
Perhaps pushing back.
Yeah, in his way, explaining his get greedy comments, explaining what they're doing with Brian Baio, Tanner Houck, his load management. Also talking up some prospect, quote-unquote, that I've never heard of. That's on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Take it with you wherever you go. Free, easy. You can see the interview in full on YouTube. Just subscribe to WEEI there. Seek out the Jones and Mego content. Don Sweeney, I guess, has an issue with those Jim Montgomery comments, which has us wondering how much longer Monty's going to be around for. Here's what Sweeney said the other
day. Don used the phrase, check a lot of boxes. Players being forefront, day one, free agency.
I mean, I don't think it's a direct reference to what we didn't have. Obviously, Florida's a good team. They're congratulated to win the Stanley Cup. Do I think, as I go back and say, do I think we should have gotten to a Game 7 and we'll see what happens? Yeah, I do. I think we left it on the table in Games 4 and 6. I'm hopeful that these two players, you know, tip that scale in our direction moving forward because of the identification, as I referenced. Elias has been in those top spots. I can't tell you whether or not he would have done a better job against Barkov than Charlie. I just think when we were looking for that extra play and that extra goal that we would describe to get us over the edge, I mean, Game 7 in Stanley Cup Finals went to 2-1. So that might be the one single pushback I have on Monty and his comment that, yeah, you can win 2-1 in those situations. You probably have to more often than not. The margins are small. You look at the last three small games of our series against Florida. You know, it wasn't runaway hockey.
Okay. So stuff it, Monty, is what I would say there.
The margins are small.
We didn't have enough to win a game 2-1. How about game 7?
Small.
Of the Stanley Cup Finals. That was a 2-1 game. You can't win that one. That's not how you can win games. What are you talking about, Monty? So the two of them are, I don't want to say sniping at one another.
There's a little friction. There's a name check.
Right. Monty's saying, yeah.
There is a small amount of friction for sure.
I would agree. It's not big. It's
small.
Yeah, small is one way to put it. So I would say that Montgomery goes at Sweeney a little bit, not by name. Sweeney goes back at Monty by name.
Yep.
And so, all right. Is Montgomery in the last year of his deal? He is, right? I think he's Ryan just said, I think so.
Is that a big deal or is it
a small deal? Yes. It's no different than Cora, right? I mean, we can debate if Montgomery is as good at his job as Cora is at his, but it's a lame duck coach, I believe.
Yes. And so, first of all, I don't think that he disagrees with Montgomery because he went out and improved the roster. At least hopefully on paper he did. He went out and got guys who he said, these guys are going to help us way.
Well, but the profile of those
guys is
a top 4D and a two-way guy.
He's not quoting in good faith.
Yeah.
Of course, some games you're going to have to win 2-1. what Monty said was you can't win every game 2-1 in the playoffs. Like, you can't survive that way. And so I agree more with Monty. I think it's just like a little, I don't know, a little sensitivity from higher up. And if you listen to Montgomery in that session after the loss, I mean, he sounds discombobulated. So it makes me wonder more if there's more dissent behind the scenes.
My head's all spinning right now.
Exactly. If there's more behind the scenes of there was grumbling throughout the season. There was grumbling at the trade deadline going, yeah, we don't have enough. What do you want from us? You want us to go game 7 with this crew? I think they should have gone game 7, but we're sitting here on the radio. We're not the ones who are picking the team out.
Do you think if they lost to Toronto, Monty was gone?
Yes.
Me too.
Absolutely.
And so, like, where do we think the friction comes from?
I think it's a narrow margin for him.
Yeah, agreed. It should be. It's the NHL. It should be. Like, I'm sorry, you can't keep getting knocked out in the first and second round and just keep your job forever. That's not how it works. That's not how it works at all in that sport. Guys win cups and aren't brought back, right? Washington did that with Barry Trotz. So, like, and you know, some of that was haggling over what they're going to pay him and everything else. But, like, guys win Stanley Cups and don't come back. Bruce Cassidy goes to a cup, and a couple of years later, he's out. And then, coincidentally, wins a cup in year one with Vegas. So, like, no, it's the NHL. You churn through coaches left and right. And so that's a backstory to the whole thing, too. All I would say is the players they added aren't exactly snipers. I mean, Elias Lindholm, at his best, was over a point per game guy.
Snipers.
Not snipers. They are not. Over a point per game guy at his very, very peak. But largely, he's 20, 25 goals, 55, 60 points. That's largely what he is. He's a two-way guy, a defensive guy. Same thing with Zadorov. Like, obviously, he's not bringing a lot of offense to the table. So Sweeney, in some ways, is doubling down on winning those games 2-1, 3-2.
I don't think the style is going to change dramatically. So I think the pressure is more on Montgomery to produce with it, and now we know that the margin is
small.
It is. It is quite small. There's no doubt about
it. This is the 24-25 season, the last season on Jim Montgomery's contract.
What are the... It is. Thank you. So what are the... wait, say that again. 24-25 season is the last season, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
It was a three-year contract that he signed.
Got it. So lame duck coach as of right now, and I don't sense, based on the sniping there, I don't sense an extension.
I just think it's interesting. Like, this is what Don Sweeney is willing to say in public. Like, what do you think he's saying behind the scenes? Like, oh, okay.
Saying this shocks.
Like, okay, fine. You don't think that you can do this 2-1? All right. I will give you some guys. I will invest in this team, even though we really don't have a lot of resources to pull into it right now. But if you don't get it done here, then what am I supposed to do with you?
Yeah, sorry about it. anyway... That's Don Sweeney and Jim Montgomery. How long is Monty going to be here? You can jump in. 617-779-7937. By the way, Sweens, what's the likelihood? Day before a holiday, what's the likelihood Arcan's going to show up to work?
Small.
Yeah, I would agree with that. 4th of July tomorrow, no chance.
There'll be a storm coming.
No chance he was going to show up.
It could snow.
You can jump in here on Jones and Mego. No Arcan today. We will get to the Patriots, an update on Brandon Ayuk. And let me ask a question that I'm not sure has been asked before. What if the Patriots already have their number one receiver of the future? We'll get to it next.
How young? So young.
We're young at heart. We're TikToking. We're FaceTiming. We're doing all that cool stuff.
Gather around the radio, fellow kids. It's Jones and Mego with Arcand.
I get the Spice Channel. No biggie. Come over.
On WEEI.
For Ayuk and the 49ers, they had conversations recently. They're no closer to a deal, from my understanding, but they're also no closer to a trade request. That's never been something that he has explored in this case. The sides just got to get back to work sometime before training camp to see if they can get something done to have him in San Francisco for the long haul.
Mike Garofolo on the NFL Network. Brandon Ayuk has not requested a trade. So, I don't know that he's going anywhere. I don't think the Patriots are in, even if he is. And so you can try to satiate yourself and say, oh, well, the Patriots are going to go out. They're going to get somebody in a trade. It's not going to happen, I don't think. So you better start looking at what they have. And I'm starting to wonder if they have something in Jalen Polk. And it's Jones and Mego with Arcan. No Arcan today here on WEEI. You can jump in on the phone, 617-779-7937. We'll get back to our big question of the day. Up now at Jones and Mego. How important is it for the Red Sox to bring back Alex Cora for next year? We'll get to that coming up. We can revisit some of what Cora told us earlier this hour That's on the Odyssey app, or you can check it out on WEEI's YouTube page. Just subscribe there. I'm starting to wonder if Jalen Polk is not just their number one receiver, but I'm starting to wonder if they have something there, Mego. And I've said this, I think, when you've been here. I know we were talking about it last week. There's a world that exists, and we can debate the percentage on it, but there's a world that exists where they have their quarterback and they have their number one receiver, and they hit on both in the draft. They took two guys in the first 37 picks. Like, that's not unheard of. That's where a lot of good receivers go. He wasn't my favorite in the draft, but the returns on him coming out of minicamp, and it's just minicamp, seemed to be pretty good. The immediate justification of the pick was that if the Patriots didn't take him at 37, somebody else was going to. He wasn't going to fall much further. Whether that's spin or the truth, I don't know. It's very possible that we're underestimating the Patriots' receiving room. And we'll see when Drake May actually gets on the field, but I'm starting to wonder how realistic that is. And if you want to put some faith in Elliot Wolf and his drafting track record, or at least the Packers' drafting track record while he was there, they found some good receivers in that stretch. Again, good receivers come from that area early in the second round. And so, I don't know, what's the likelihood they already have that guy? They have their Brandon Ayuk, who was the 25th pick, or Debo went early in the second round. You know, styles are different, but they've already got that guy on the roster.
I think with this position, it's pretty much impossible to tell from minicamp. And so it'll really bear out. You'll get a better idea in training camp. And obviously, if he gets playing time in the season, it would be unusual for them to be able to hit on both in the same draft. I feel like the silver lining to how crappy people expect the team to be this year is that fans look at it and go, well, maybe you'll get yourself into a Cincinnati situation where then you're so high in the draft that you get to get some turnkey amazing receiver. I always thought that the notes on Polk were more about, hey, this is like a really strong character guy. He's going to be a great leader for that room. He's going to be dependable. He's not necessarily the most explosive receiver. He's not going to have incredible separation. And maybe you're going and looking further down in the draft for somebody who dropped to get something like that. But I always thought that it would, like, if he's the number one receiver, I don't know if that's great.
Oh, so I think I feel if he's their number one receiver, and it's not
Javon Baker.
Yeah, I feel better about Polk than Baker, wouldn't you?
I don't know. I mean, if Baker has some kind of freaky athleticism and he's just like a tornado
I feel better about hitting at 37. And I said this before, Jakobi Meyers is a good receiver. But the fact that Jakobi Meyers was showing as an undrafted player, not a fourth round pick like Baker, but the fact he was showing more early on in his training camp as an undrafted guy than the first round pick, N'Keal Harry, was a bad sign.
Yeah, but I guess I don't really care. And I know I understand this is a club that's in a desperate position, so you want to use your high draft picks to the best value that you can. But at the end of the day, I don't really care where your number one receiver comes from.
No, I don't either.
If he ends up being Jakobi Meyers, then to me, even with a 37 pick and Jakobi Meyers was undrafted, that's a great success.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if the fourth rounder is showing more than the second rounder, that's a bad sign, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I just remember the book on him not necessarily being like something different from a Jakobi Meyers.
Well, look, so
like
this,
he's not going to all of a sudden explode in an NFL game and be Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be Justin Jefferson, but I think Jakobi Meyers would be, if you're getting Jakobi Meyers in round two, that's not good enough, I don't think. And so I think you can aim higher than that. I think you're already starting to hear, and this is probably spin from the team, but like reporters are higher on Polk's ceiling than I think they were when he was first drafted. Like, for instance, let me hear Greg Bedard from his podcast on Jalen Polk and how he stood out so far in the early offseason program.
Anybody who's listened to this podcast or read me knows how I feel about Jalen Polk and what I've seen on the field from him. I think he's going to be really good. I think he's got a chance to be, at least statistically, one of the best rookie receivers for the Patriots in some time. I just think he's Jakobi Meyers with much bigger upside and very sure-handed, tough, smart, knows what he's doing. I love Jalen Polk, and so I feel a lot better about the third wide receiver spot going into this year.
Meyers with much bigger upside. You know who he gets compared to? You know who, from a speed standpoint and some of his measurable standpoints, he compares to, and Phil wrote about this? Davante Adams. And so I'm not saying he's Devontae, and I'm definitely not saying he's Justin Jefferson, but again, what's the percentage that they have these guys? And we look at it and go, go get Brandon Ayuk. Because the one thing that started to strike me, I'm higher on the Patriots than a lot of people. I'm not super high on them. 6 wins. When we talk about trading a first-round pick, you do have to factor in that trading that first-round pick, it could be the number one pick. And so are you giving up the number one pick in the draft for Brandon Ayuk? Or are you giving up, and I don't think the Patriots would give it up and give him a contract anyway, but like, are you doing that? And I want all the talent I could get. I'd love to have Polk and Ayuk, or Polk and, you know, pick your receiver, T. Higgins. I would love to have that. But you do have to be a little leery about trading that number one pick if they're going to be as bad as some of the prognosticators are saying they're going to be.
So with that Greg Bedard clip, he says that he feels a lot better about that number three position in the depth chart of the wide receivers. Who does he have above him then? Just to factor think, right now, I'd guess Douglas.
I think from what you read, it's Douglas and Osborne. But I think that's just. I think that's like how Brissett is above Polk right now. Brissett is above May right now. I think it's just a bit
of experience.
It's a bit of a placeholder thing. Yeah.
Okay. All right. No, I was just trying to get a read on that because again, I feel like we've barely talked about KJ Osborne and anything that he could do because it's more just like. Almost to have veteran presence in there because you haven't been able to develop anybody outside of DeMario Douglas. But I hear all the comments on Polk, and it's like he's a steady Eddie guy is what it sounds like to me. And that's what Jacoby Myers was. And you could have resigned Jacoby Myers and had him here, and he had an even better season last year. So to me, it's like, I don't know. I can't do backflips for that. I hope he's good. I hope he's steady. I hope he's Jacoby Myers.
So you don't think
I'll
he's the number
happy.
One?
No, I don't. I don't think that that's like a great position for you to be in. I guess I'm more excited about something like if Javon Baker goes out there and he's like a total anomaly. Like, I don't care where he's drafted. I don't care if he's drafted lower than Polk is.
Yeah. I just think that's a bad... If you're whiffing at pick 37, that's a bad sign.
Is it whiffing if he's the third receiver?
Not initially, but if that's kind of his ceiling in the NFL, yes, that's a whiff at 37.
I get it, because you need to make value out of the draft if that's the only thing you're going to do. Like, if you're not going to bring in free agents and you're not going to be swinging big trades, then you better hit on the draft. But their record with wide receivers, if he's playing and he actually has some stats, to me, that's like a big enough hit.
617-779.
Because I don't think they should be doing it that way.
793-7, you can jump in. What's the likelihood they have their number one receiver? And I don't mean like the number one guy on the Pats. Like they have their own version of a number one receiver, one of these guys. They get found at 37 all the time. And the early returns on Polk are good. You can jump in here on Jones and Mego. No Arcan. Today we'll get back to our big question of the day as it relates to Alex Cora, his future in Boston. How much urgency should there be with keeping him around? How much of a priority should he be, even over the trade deadline? We'll get to that next.
How young? So young.
We're young at heart. We're TikToking. We're FaceTiming. We're doing all that cool stuff.
Gather around the radio, fellow kids. It's Jones and Mego with Arcan.
I get the Spice Channel. No biggie. Come over.
On WEEI.
For Ayuk and the 49ers, they had conversations recently. They're no closer to a deal, from my understanding, but they're also no closer to a trade request. That's never been something that he has explored in this case. The sides just got to get back to work sometime before training camp to see if they can get something done to have him in San Francisco for the long haul.
Mike Garafolo on the NFL Network. Brandon Ayuk has not requested a trade. So, I don't know that he's going anywhere. I don't think the Patriots are in, even if he is. And so you can try to satiate yourself and say, oh, well, the Patriots are going to go out. They're going to get somebody in a trade. It's not going to happen. I don't think. So you better start looking at what they have. And I'm starting to wonder if they have something in Jalen Polk. And it's Jones and Mego with Arcan. No Arcan today here on WEEI. You can jump in on the phone, 617-779-7937. We'll get back to our big question of the day. Up now at Jones and Mego. How important is it for the Red Sox to bring back Alex Cora for next year? We'll get to that coming up. We can revisit some of what Cora told us earlier this hour. That's on the Odyssey app, or you can check it out on WEEI's YouTube page. Just subscribe there. I'm starting to wonder if Jalen Polk is not just their number one receiver, but I'm starting to wonder if they have something there, Mego. And I've said this, I think, when you've been here. I know we were talking about it last week. There's a world that exists. And we can debate the percentage on it, but there's a world that exists where they have their quarterback and they have their number one receiver. And they hit on both in the draft. They took two guys in the first 37 picks. Like, that's not unheard of. That's where a lot of good receivers go. He wasn't my favorite in the draft. But the returns on him coming out of minicamp, and this is minicamp, seemed to be pretty good. The immediate justification of the pick was that if the Patriots didn't take him at 37, somebody else was going to. He wasn't going to fall much further. Whether that's spin or the truth, I don't know. It's very possible that we're underestimating the Patriots receiving room. And we'll see when Drake May actually gets on the field, but I'm starting to wonder how realistic that is. And if you want to put some faith in Elliott Wolf and his drafting track record, or at least the Packers' drafting track record while he was there, they found some good receivers in that stretch. Again, good receivers come from that area early in the second round. And so, I don't know, what's the likelihood they already have that guy? They have their Brandon Ayuk, who was the 25th pick, or Debo went early in the second round. You know, styles are different, but they've already got that guy on the roster.
I think with this position, it's pretty much impossible to tell from minicamp. And so it'll really bear out. You'll get a better idea in training camp. And obviously, if he gets playing time in the season, it would be unusual for them to be able to hit on both in the same draft. I feel like the silver lining to how crappy people expect the team to be this year is that fans look at it and go, well, maybe you'll get yourself into a Cincinnati situation where then you're so high in the draft that you get to get some turnkey, amazing receiver. I always thought that the notes on Polk were more about, hey, this is like a really strong character guy. He's going to be a great leader for that room. He's going to be dependable. He's not necessarily the most explosive receiver. He's not going to have incredible separation. And maybe you're going and looking further down in the draft for somebody who dropped to get something like that. But I always thought that it would, like, if he's the number one receiver, I don't know if that's great.
Oh, so I think I feel if he's their number one receiver, and it's not
Javon Baker.
Yeah, I feel better about Polk than Baker, wouldn't you?
I don't know. I mean, if Baker has some kind of freaky athleticism and he's just like a tornado,
I just feel better about them hitting
press conferences.
I feel better about hitting at 37. And I said this before, Jacoby Myers is a good receiver. But the fact that Jacoby Myers was showing as an undrafted player, not a fourth round pick like Baker, but the fact he was showing more early on in his training camp as an undrafted guy than the first round pick, N'Keal Harry, was a bad
sign. Yeah, but I guess I don't really care. And I know I understand this is a club that's in a desperate position, so you want to use your high draft picks to the best value that you can. But at the end of the day, I don't really care where your number one receiver comes from.
No, I don't either.
If he ends up being Jacoby Myers, then to me, even with a 37 pick and Jacoby Myers was undrafted, that's a great success.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if the fourth rounder is showing more than the second rounder, that's a bad sign, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I just remember the book on him not necessarily being like something different from a Jacoby Myers.
Well, look, so
like
this,
he's not going to all of a sudden explode in an NFL game and be Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be Justin Jefferson, but I think Jacoby Myers would be, if you're getting Jacoby Myers in round two, that's not good enough, I don't think. And so I think you can aim higher than that. I think you're already starting to hear, and this is probably spin from the team, but like reporters are higher on Polk's ceiling than I think they were when he was first drafted. Like, for instance, let me hear Greg Bedard from his podcast on Jalen Polk and how he stood out so far in the early offseason program.
Anybody who's listened to this podcast or read me knows how I feel about Jalen Polk and what I've seen on the field from him. I think he's going to be really good. I think he's got a chance to be, at least statistically, one of the best rookie receivers for the Patriots in some time. I just think he's Jacoby Myers with much bigger upside and very sure-handed, tough, smart, knows what he's doing. I love Jalen Polk, and so I feel a lot better about the third wide receiver spot going into this year.
Myers with much bigger upside. You know who he gets compared to? You know who from a speed standpoint and some of his measurable standpoints he compares to, and Phil wrote about this? Davante Adams. And so I'm not saying he's Devontae, and I'm definitely not saying he's Justin Jefferson, but again, what's the percentage that they have these guys? And we look at it and go get Brandon Ayuk. Because the one thing that started to strike me, I'm higher on the Patriots than a lot of people. I'm not super high on them. 6 wins. When we talk about trading a first-round pick, you do have to factor in that trading that first-round pick, it could be the number one pick. And so are you giving up the number one pick in the draft for Brandon Ayuk? Or are you giving up? And I don't think the Patriots would give it up and give him a contract anyway. But, like, are you doing that? And I want all the talent I could get. I'd love to have Polk and Ayuk. Or Polk and, you know, pick your receiver, T. Higgins. I would love to have that. But you do have to be a little leery about trading that number one pick if they're going to be as bad as some of the prognosticators are saying they're going to be.
So with that Greg Bedard clip, he says that he feels a lot better about that number three position in the depth chart of the wide receivers. Who does he have above him then, just de facto right now? I'd guess Douglas
I think
above
it's,
him.
I think from what you read, it's Douglas and Osborne. But I think that's okay. I think that's like how Brissett is above Polk right now. Brissett is above May right now. I think it's
just
a bit of
experience.
It's a bit of a placeholder thing, yeah.
Okay. All right. No, I was just trying to get a read on that because, again, I feel like we've barely talked about KJ Osborne and anything that he could do because it's more just like almost to have veteran presence in there because you haven't been able to develop anybody outside of DeMario Douglas. But I hear all the comments on Polk, and it's like he's a steady Eddie guy is what it sounds like to me. And that's what Jacoby Myers was. And you could have resigned Jacoby Myers and had him here, and he had an even better season last year. So to me, it's like, I don't know. I can't do backflips for that. I hope he's good. I hope he's steady. I hope he's Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, so you don't think he's the number one?
No, I don't. I don't think that that's like a great position for you to be in. I guess I'm more excited about something like if Javon Baker goes out there and he's like, and a total anomaly. Like, I don't care where he's drafted. I don't care if he's drafted lower than Polk is.
Yeah, I just think that's a bad... If you're whiffing at pick 37, that's a bad sign.
Was it whiffing if he's the third receiver?
Not initially, but if that's kind of his ceiling in the NFL, yes, that's a whiff at 37.
I get it, because you need to make value out of the draft if that's the only thing you're going to do. Like, if you're not going to bring in free agents and you're not going to be swinging big trades, then you better hit on the draft. But their record with wide receivers, if he's playing and he actually has some stats, to me, that's like a big enough hit.
617-779.
Because I don't think they should be doing it that way.
793-7, you could jump in. What's the likelihood they have their number one receiver? And I don't mean like the number one guy on the Pats. Like they have their own version of a number one receiver, one of these guys. They get found at 37 all the time. And the early returns on Polk are good. You can jump in here on Jones and Mego. No Arcan. Today we'll get back to our big question of the day. As it relates to Alex Cora, his future in Boston, how much urgency should there be with keeping him around? How much of a priority should he be, even over the trade deadline? We'll get to that next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.